Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, everyone, on today's episode of Nothing Major, we have a fantastic guest. Nick Kyrgios joins the podcast. We hit a lot of different things. We talk his comeback, his goals, chances of winning a major title, and of course, some funny stories with him playing doubles with our very own Jack Sock. We are going to hit on some of the exhibitions that we have been seeing with Carlos Alcaraz in New York and in Charlotte. And most importantly, we will dive into Sam Querrey and his thirstiness in DMing people to come on this podcast. Very lucky for us that he is putting himself out there. And with that, let's get into the show.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to Nothing Major. I'm John Isner, joined with my co-host Jack Sock, Sam Querrey, and Stevie Johnson. We're also joined with our executive producer, Charlie Fox, and our production team at Sift Creative. We have a fantastic episode today. The one and only Nick Kyrgios is joining the pod. It was an interview that unfortunately I was not able to be a part of, but of course, Jack, Sam, and Steve carried the dead weight of me, and they did perfect with it. But before we do that, I want to talk to Sam real quick. We've been joking amongst us. He's been the thirstiest of us four as far as reaching out to players. You've been absolutely grinding, Sam. So, like, give us a little taste of who all you've reached out to. How many players on the men's and the women's side? How many yeses have you gotten? How many no's? And how many no replies have you gotten?
Yeah, so I'm like a car salesman. I'm just grinding, trying to get guests for us. And for every guest we get, I get 10 no's or 10 of the guests ghosting me. So when I reach out, like, you guys know, some of the players, we have their phone numbers. Some of them, we don't. So half of this is like texting these players. Half of it is like going on Instagram and DMing them. But I've reached out to Medvedev, Wawrinka, Murray, Dimitrov, Tommy Paul. We've reached out to Ben Shelton, Caroline Wozniacki. And now some of them, like, I've got them like a fish on the line. I've got some dialect back and forth. I'm going to get them.
They're on. You just got a real man.
You know, like, I've, like, Wawrinka and I, Dimitrov, they're all, Tommy Paul's giving me the runaround a little bit. I'm going to get them on. I've getting a lot of no replies from some. Oh, Matthew McConaughey. I reached out to Matthew McConaughey. Didn't hear back. he's playing tennis. Like, why not shoot my shot?
Yeah,
in his DMs?
In his DMs, yeah. I slid into Matthew McConaughey's DMs.
Oh, my God.
I feel like a lot of players aren't checking them, but I don't know. Like, Wozniacki, I think I got Wozniacki. He's going to come on. We just got to find some time. So,
any messages you could read for us, Sam? Or
yeah,
like,
yes. Yeah. Can you read? I want to hear the McConaughey one. Hey, Matt, I really love your work.
Yeah.
I want to read this one.
How do you start that conversation?
Hey, I got it. My McConaughey.
Unashamed. Here we go.
This is the message I send to a lot of people. I'm like,
you have like a standard script?
Yeah. Like, hey, Matthew, how's it going? See, you've been playing a bunch of tennis. Myself, John. It's not that bad. Myself, John Isner, Jack Sock, Steve Johnson have a new podcast called Nothing Major. We've been recording for a few months, and we've had Taylor Fritz, Casper Ruud, Diego Schwartzman, and others on. Wanted to see if you'd be interested in coming on for an episode. Super fun and easy, and it would only take about 30 minutes of your time. We could work around your schedule. Thanks, Sam.
You name drop tennis players and Matthew McConaughey as if that was going to make a difference on what please, is going on.
Don't name drop my name, please.
You name drop the name drops. Like,
hey, look, this is what it takes. I'm a salesman over here. I mean, I want him to know that we've, like,
you're like Will Ferrell in Eastbound and Down right now.
he's got to know that we've had some reputable names on, and that maybe that'll pull him in a little bit.
Schaefer.
Yeah, Ashley Schaefer, BMW. That's the same query.
So is that the same prompt you're going to send to like Medvedev or Wawrinka?
Yeah. I'm sending the same prompt.
Just, you know, hey, Daniil.
Is this a copy and paste to everybody or is this an organic message?
No, I personalize it. Let me, okay. Wawrinka. So like Wawrinka would be like, this is like maybe 6 weeks ago. We're going back and forth like, hey, it'd be awesome if you come on. And he's like, yeah, with pleasure. I'd love to. I'm like, kind of like, hey, what about next Tuesday? And he said, let's organize when it's best schedule for you guys and for me. I would love to come on. I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do right now. And then he never got back to me.
language barrier.
Yeah, that's tough sometimes with the language barrier. Dimitrov, I'm close. He gave me a little bit. I thought I had him. He's like, yeah, I'd love to come on. But it has to wait a little bit. I'm a little bit under the weather and I got to go to the doctor. That seemed a little like.
Are you going to bug him again?
Going to the doctor.
That was November 5th. So yeah.
Yeah, it's been a month.
Yeah, I'm going to bug him again. I got to wait it out. Tommy Paul. We're going to get Tommy Paul. Tommy's been, he's a friend. He's been giving us the runaround a little bit.
I got confirmation yesterday that he was, come on. So.
Yeah, but I've gotten confirmation too. Tommy's kind of like, correct. Yeah, we'll do it. And then it just can't get done. But I'm just going to peer pressure him into doing it. So I'm trying to think.
Sounds like the right strategy.
Wozniacki actually gave me a date that she could do it. It just like didn't work for us.
Oh, bummer.
That one stung. Oh, Alcaraz's agent. She used to be Jack's agent.
Max?
Yeah, sorry. Max Eisenbud. Yeah, I've jokingly like come across him twice in the last 6 weeks and be like, oh, how can we get Carlos on the pod? And he laughs at me and then walks away and doesn't even answer the question. So I
I didn't know Max. I'll just, yeah, I can reach out to Max.
I don't know if Max is agent, but he's involved, but like he just literally laughs and just like, of course, Carlos is not gonna go on your podcast. But I'm asking.
Yeah. Hey, we appreciate you asking.
I'm asking.
I don't think that's out of the question. I don't think that's.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah. It's kind of a disrespect to Nothing Major there.
Let's not go through Max Eisenbud. We got to find a different avenue to go through to get Carlos. Those are the few.
Well, we appreciate the hard work, Sam.
I'm trying, guys. I'm trying.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for grinding.
That'll be really good on social. Hey, Matt. Big fan here.
Matthew.
That's the best part.
Love your work. So Nick is on the pod, but before we get into that, we're right into the thick of the off season and the exhibition season, which we've seen on TV a lot recently. Alcaraz had two events, one at Madison Square Garden, sold out, over 19,000 people, played against Ben Shelton there, along with Emma Navarro and Jesse Pegula. We also had Alcaraz hop on a plane down to Charlotte, the Spectrum Center, Francis Tiafoe, and Madison Keys and Sloane Stephens were also a part of that as well. Sam Querrey was on the call for both of those matches. That one in Charlotte was also sold out, over 16 or 17,000. So it just goes to show that everyone involved is a very, very big draw, especially Carlos. I think people really enjoy seeing him. I think some people will criticize someone like Alcaraz coming over from Europe to do two exhibitions, only spend two or three nights in the U.S. and then fly back to Europe. They might think that's going to disrupt his training for the Australian Open. And really, they're not wrong. I'm going to start with you, Sam. How are the events and what do you think about Carlos Alcaraz doing these events?
All right, so I have two thoughts. One, you always hear about the players or people complaining about the offseason being too long, and then players do these exhibitions, whether it's these ones or Abu Dhabi or... They used to have these massive exhibitions in Asia and India. So I think the players, as much as they talk about having off seasons, they don't really want an off season because they want to go make a bunch of money playing these exhibitions. My second thought was, like you said, I was on the call. I called the MSG exhibition on Tennis Channel. Then I flew to Charlotte and called that exhibition for Tennis Channel. Both of them were awesome. Like Madison Square Garden, Alcaraz and Ben Shelton was incredible. Like you said, over 19,000 people. Both those guys are charismatic. They got smiles on their faces. They put on a show. Like, the crowd was into it. They were into it. And same with Charlotte at the Spectrum Center. Francis Tiafoe came out in a Charlotte Hornets jersey. He played the entire EXO in a jersey. If anyone else did that, they'd look like an idiot. But Francis Tiafoe pulls it off. If Isner went out and put an exhibition in a basketball jersey, you'd just be like, this guy's a clown. But when Francis does it, it's cool. So both of the events were awesome. Having said that, I don't know how you guys feel. I would much rather watch a U.S. Open third round match, night match on Ash Stadium than go watch one of these exhibition matches.
I'm with you there, Sam. Side note, real quick, I don't want to get off too off topic here, but do we think Francis Tiafoe owns all 32 NBA jerseys?
Yeah,
I feel like he's friends with
every player in the NBA.
I know,
NBA
I haven't seen him in a Memphis Grizzlies jersey is what I'm getting at, but I'm assuming he has all 32. So anyways, well, we know he definitely has a Hornets one because he played in Charlotte wearing the Buzz City jersey. But yeah, look, I'm with you, Sam. Like, I would prefer, you know, go, you know, when the U.S. Open rolls around, watching tennis right then and there, watching Alcaraz play a third round match on Arthur Ashe Stadium. But as we know, a city like New York, they want the best there. And Alcaraz was coming early December, so people showed up at Madison Square Garden. I forget which night that was during the course of the week, but
it was a Wednesday night.
Okay, Wednesday night. You know, there's obviously New York City's big place, lots of tennis fans. So to me, it's not that surprising that it sold out. Charlotte, on the other hand, like I was, you know, I saw that event. They've been promoting it for a while. I was interested to see how, I guess, well that would go, but sold out again. They did a fantastic job. I think that just goes to show the star power that Carlos Alcaraz has. The people go there, yes, they want to see tennis, but they want to be entertained in a fun and playful manner. And, yes. And I think that's what they got with all four of those matches.
No, you're absolutely right. It was there were tennis matches, but it was more of just like an entertainment night. It was like going to a show kind of, you know, they drag it out with they changed the format. It's no ad scoring, 2 out of 3 sets, a tiebreaker for the third set. There's celebrities there. They bring them on the court. They do a good job of changing it up to making it be like a 3-hour production and not 2 tennis matches.
Yeah. Well, one thing I can say for sure, if any of us ever ended the year 3 and we got offered to go play 2 exhibitions, let's say, and I'm just making up 2 European cities in December to get paid what he's getting paid, we're going to do it every single time.
100%.
Yeah, obviously. But I think it begs the question of Jannik Sinner clearly is getting exhibition offers in the offseason. I haven't seen him doing anything like that. So they're going about their offseason differently. None of us begrudge Carlos for going out there and you know, collecting 2 massive checks. But Sinner seems to be putting his head down after his fantastic year and just going back to work, keeping sort of a low profile. And obviously both of them will be ready to go in Australia. But I think if Carlos doesn't perform that well down in the Australian Open, a lot of people are going to jump on the fact that he was in the United States in December playing exhibitions as opposed to getting ready. I don't think that's fair, but that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair at all. Like, especially the way he's traveling, how he's getting there. He's not, you know, making too many layovers, I would assume, in different cities on the way. Like, we're still a month away from Australia. He's got exactly what he needs to do. He's so dialed in. But watching those guys at MSG, it's got to be probably the coolest place to play tennis. I don't know about you guys, but I would think it would be the coolest place, non-tennis venue to play, because that is like the absolute mecca of sports, like New York, Madison Square Garden. Like, to sell that out, to be a part of that for Ben and Jesse and Emma and Carlos is an unbelievable like accomplishment. And it's great for tennis. Carlos, I think, more so than Jannik, is an absolute entertainer. And, you know, he is the best draw for these events at the moment. I don't think there's anybody else better than him.
I actually was a part of an MSG EXO when I was playing. And I would say that was outside of ATP accolades or whatever we've all done. That was one of the coolest things I was ever a part of. Celebrities that come out, the New York City crowd, it was like, yeah, I mean, I think in those, you have part of the crowd that knows it's going to be more of a show, more of entertainment. You have some people that think they're getting a ticket and watching like a real tennis match, like we were talking about. They think they're going to go see a U.S. Open intensity, you know, quarterfinal. So it's always tough, but at the end of the day, you're there to, yeah, you're put on a show and to entertain people. And so yeah, I'm not surprised in the slightest that they were sold out and very successful in both of them.
Do you guys remember this? Not Jack, because he remembers. I don't remember that.
I remember.
Wait, you at Madison Square Garden?
We went to a Knicks game, got a jersey with my name on it. Like, it was sat courtside. Like,
before Indian Wells, like in that March date?
This was in...
Are you sure you were there?
We need to confirm this.
2017, Jack.
Yeah, it was 2017. Yeah, it was like when I was good at tennis.
You know what, guys? I think we ought to contact MSG and put on a Nothing Major exhibition.
Hey,
it seems that they can sell out anything there.
I think they have like a little restaurant in the front we can maybe borrow.
How many? The four of us go to MSG right now. They're selling out Nothing Major, EXO. I play Jack. Stevie plays John. Then we play doubles. How many tickets do we sell?
And they're pumping the promotion, like they're working hard. Like
they're working hard. We sell 5,000?
I was gonna say 7,500-ish.
Yeah, that would be bad. Embarrassing.
Oh.
But again, I'm horrible at exhibitions.
But like the good thing that John has going for him is everyone loves to see him serve. And as an opponent of his in the exhibition, if he just pops a couple aces, you know what I mean? He gets that sound, that's all they care about. Like they don't really want like a 20-ball rally with like a measly error. Like John hitting an ace or like an overhead winner, they're like, this guy is the greatest tennis player on the planet. And I'm like, great, let me walk to the other side and not play another point. Like, this is fantastic, you know?
Yeah, but, I can tell and guarantee you one thing, that the novelty wears off quick. After about like my third ace, people don't give a about it.
How annoying is it for you when they're like, let me see the heat, John. Let me get the fastest serve. Oh, there's nothing more than
one. You have the world record, 157. Could hit one 150. Like, dude, lady, I cannot hit a serve 120 right now if I tried. Because you know how it is. If you don't have any adrenaline, it's impossible to do.
There's no adrenaline when you're going out there battling one of us in an exhibition?
Not at the beginning, at the very least. But I don't know, but when I get out on like to do a clinic or something and I'm cold, I've been standing up for an hour already, and then at the very end they want to return my serve and they ask to see the heater. Like, no, there is no heater.
Do you guys watch Djokovic play Delpo in Argentina? Another exhibition.
What a gesture by Novak, huh?
Right. It's incredible.
Absolutely incredible. Like, the guy does not get enough credit. We know this for how good of a dude he is, but to fly from Europe all the way down to Argentina, Stevie, to your point, I'm sure the travel was easier than most, but still, to do that in support of his good friend Delpo, to let him have the send-off that his career deserves, was absolutely amazing. I don't think Delpo would have wanted his final match against anyone else, so to have that against Novak was incredible. It goes to show that the bond that those two have and the bond that Novak has with so many players on tour, so many of the really, really good players on tour, of course, Delpo being one of those.
All right, let me ask you guys this. You got 1 second to answer this. All you can jump in at the same time. Who won the UTS finals? All right, that's my first. No one cares about that one.
I don't know, but it's a unique format. It's been going on for at least 3 years now.
Yeah, it looks fun.
Demon Hour won $420,000 plus a grand final bonus of $375,000, I guess, throughout the course of every event that he played, every UTS event.
He like overall did the best. He won $800,000 in London. That is freaking insane.
What are we doing?
I don't know. We're getting $3,500 to go play exhibition in Texas towns.
All right, we are done with the exhibition chat. Time to get into the Kyrgios interview.
All right, everyone, this is a big day. We've got fellow podcaster, media guy, commentator, most importantly, non-major winner.
Yes, nothing major.
Nick Kyrgios. We've all got no major. Joining the pod. Nick, thanks for hopping on. You've been out of tennis for 2 years. You're starting up in January. You've been out for 2 years. I want to know, what's been the biggest kind of motivation to get back into playing? And then also, when did you start training like full out to know you're going to come back?
Well, first of all, I really am liking this pod, guys. I've been following it for a while now, and the content's been sensational. And as a fellow podcaster, it's interesting, and I love what it's about. Nothing Major is hilarious. I need some snapbacks. I need some of these hats, by the way, because they're fire. But yeah, look, I mean, I had major wrist surgery after 2022, and I honestly thought I wasn't going to play again, to be honest. I was having pain in my wrist, and you guys know, you look at some of these guys that have had wrist surgeries, Delpo, team, like, they never come back the same. So I probably won't be ever the same player that I was, but I think I didn't want to kind of go out just after that amazing year. And yeah, I've been training full-time now. I mean, Jack knows, my good friend Frawls, he's with me full-time now, and we're doing, like, you know what it's like. You got to be in shape to play Grand Slams. You know, I need to be at training 2-3 hours a day. So that's what it is at the moment, but I'm feeling pretty good.
What's the game plan, or what are you going to play?
I'm probably going to play Slams, Masters events, and maybe a couple 500s.
Everything feels good. Forehand serve, I guess what you...
Yeah, I mean, everything feels good. I mean, it's just like the scar's disgusting. It's on both sides. It feels okay. I mean, it feels good. I don't know if I'm going to come back and be, you know, like where I was playing, but I definitely feel like there's a lot of controversial energy going to be coming in the next year or two, especially with all this stuff going on at the moment. Like, it's going to be interesting.
Have you missed tennis the last 2 years or no? Because, like, you've been commentating, you're on ESPN, you're good at that, you've got the podcast, you're doing other stuff, or, like, could you see yourself not playing again and just keep going on that route?
Well, I mean,
the smile over there, I feel we know what that
is. I mean, look, I mean, you guys know, like, me and Jack were good friends, and then I see how happy he is now in the States playing pickle. Like, a part of me, I mean, like, it'd be great not to go out there. It's like, why am I going to put myself in, like, that pressure cooker again, where it's like you have so many eyes on you, and everyone, especially with me, I feel like everyone's just waiting for me at that moment when I need to, like, I'm going to up or do something crazy, and it's just going to explode. So it's like, I've thought about it. I'm like, why do I want to put myself back out there? But I feel like I've got a lot more. I've got something, you know, let's be honest. I just want to go out there, and I really want to play Sinner. Like, I'm waiting for it, man.
What's the game plan against Sinner?
Well, I thought about this, and I've been talking about it a little bit. Like, if I played him in Australian Open, like, I would get every single person in the crowd to just, like, get on him. Like, I would just turn into an absolute riot. Like, I would lose all respect, would go out the window, and would just do anything to win.
Are you concerned at all that you'll never get back to that same level? Does that matter to you at this point? Or is it just for, you know, the love of the game? Or, you know, what's left to accomplish, you know, for you coming back? Is it just finishing on your own terms, or take us through that?
I mean, I don't think it'd be fair to kind of expect to be playing, you know, the way I was playing. But at the same time, you guys know, like, injuries are part of the sport. You know, we've all had injuries where they keep you out for months at a time, and you come back, and I'm not going to go out there, and I haven't barely played a match for a year and a half. So it's kind of impossible for me to go out there and just light it up, I think, straight away or anything like that. But yeah, it's more so about going out on my own terms. Like, I didn't want to just have an injury. And look, I don't want to be someone like Andy Murray, that's for sure. Like, absolutely hobbling to the finish line. No. And now he's, like, coaching Novak. I'm like, man, this guy actually can't stay away from tennis. Like, he just can't. Like, I was like, all right, he's going to go with his family, enjoy his life. Then he's like, I'm coaching Novak. I'm like, oh my God, I'd break up with him for sure. I was like, yeah, I think it's just going out on my own terms. Like, you know, if I don't win a match, I don't really care. It's more so just coming back from an injury like this and just going out there again.
Do you ever find it annoying? Like, sometimes I found this when people are like, oh, Nick's got so much talent. Like, you know, he's wasting. Like, you've heard that. We've all kind of heard that. Like, do you find that, does that have more pressure, or do you just, like, brush that off and all is good? Just, like, screw those people.
It's annoying, that's for sure. Like, I still hear it every day. It's just like, oh, one of the biggest wastes of talents of all time. And it's like, amazing. Like, that's really nice. Thank you. But look, I don't know. Like, I try and, you know, I'm training hard now. I don't know what else I could be doing to maximize my ability. I mean, maybe when I was a bit younger, I probably could have taken things more seriously. But I mean, we all could have had moments where I guess we could have, you know, sacrifice something else a bit more to get more out of our tennis. But I think I've done pretty well. Like, I think we've all done relatively really well in our tennis careers, and we're all in good stead, and we're all doing some amazing things now. And outside of tennis, like, this podcast is sick. And I don't know. I just, usually people that are saying that generically not doing as well as, I guess, you know, what we're doing now. So it sucks. Yeah, it does suck.
They're usually just, like, internet losers for the most part.
Yeah, the guy with the ski mask. Like, the ski mask.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
Henry Ford, you know?
Henry Ford. Yeah, okay.
Do you think you'd actually be worse if you all of a sudden just, like, flipped a switch and you 100%. Practice on it? Yeah, yeah. And you, like, 100%. Did everything, you know, quote-unquote, the right way?
Yeah, I definitely. Like yesterday, I played Diabolical, got a great rest, and then I went out for dinner yesterday, had like a bottle of wine, had some fun, and then I played on Lights Out today. And that was the mystery of my career. It's like I prepare amazingly and then lose first round. And then I'd go out every night and then win the tournament. It was like, so I gave up. I had no idea what the preparation was that I had to do. So I just kind of just, as long as I'm feeling good and happy, I think I play all right.
I think everyone's different. Every player is different. I think people want to get put in a box a lot of the time. You and I, we did things maybe a little differently. I mean, at times probably had too much fun.
I don't regret a thing. I don't regret a thing.
Yeah, neither do I.
It was so fun. But also, when people say, like, when I go out there and, you know, have fun the night before or do that, and they're like, oh, he's just depressurizing, like, he doesn't want to deal with the pressure. It's like, I just like having fun. Like, I just love going out there and whatever it is, like, I don't know. I just live in the moment, I guess, a bit too much. I could have prepared probably a bit better, but I don't know. I don't know, Sam. It's an interesting question. It's a bit too late now, though. I mean, I'm 29 yeah, true, yeah. now. Can't really change it now.
We all obviously love playing tennis. We enjoyed it.
Yeah.
At what point do you think it kind of went from tennis and going out there and having the best time to like it's fun? It's kind of a grind and it's a job at one point.
Yeah, I look at your journey. Like I played a lot of juniors growing up. Where you guys, I don't know if I mean you. I know that you didn't play juniors at all, Stevie. You were dominating the college scene. Like I played a lot of juniors, so. I guess when I got to number one junior in the world, like I was still in school, like I wasn't really training that hard. And then like, you know, you look at the number one juniors usually transition to be, you know, relatively pretty good players. And I guess that's when a lot of coaches were like, oh, you got to take it seriously. And I was just like, I'm doing it the way I want to do it. And then obviously, you know, at 19, having those crazy results and then like just being thrown into the deep end, like, oh, he's going to take over the sport and do this. I don't think I was ready for it. But two, I just don't think I genuinely wanted to. I think there's just personalities that you can't handle. Like, there's no way I could have dealt with the sponsorships, all the business side of things at Novak or Roger and stuff. I'm not that personality where I could juggle all that. I think some people are just made to have all of it perfectly done. And some people just like me who, I don't know, I wasn't ready to take on, I guess, the mantle. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of brings me to an interesting point. Like, because you had so much, like, success early in your career, you know, beating Rafa at Wimby. Like, if you look back, is that, like, a turning point for you? Is that something, success you had early that you wish you maybe would have had later and had some more kind of building blocks to that point? Or did that just catapult you to where you wanted to be quicker when you were just 19, if I'm not mistaken?
I forgot to enter the Nottingham Challenger like the week before. And I was like, I'm going home. Like, I don't want to play. And my coach was like, no, you're playing the qualies and then you're playing Nottingham. So I forgot to enter, qualified, then won the Challenger for the wild card. I was going to go home. Like, I was like, I didn't even care about it. And then the week later it happened and it all just happened and it all just changed. And then it became, I guess, as Jack said, the job. And then like I had these academy coaches making my schedule, like, we got to play here, and it kind of lost. That's, I guess, for me, was like, whoa, this is not how I expected it to be. Like, I feel like I didn't have a say in my schedule. I had to play these events. Where now it's like you have the luxury of showing up to places and you have that luxury later in your career. But then I was like, wow, this is like a job. And I guess I started losing a bit of that enjoyment as well. And that's why, you know, I have the Misha Zverev where I'm just like, I'm fried eggs. I'm just walking off the court and I'm not trying. And I just don't want to play because like the schedule, like I was away from home for like seven, 8 months at that stage being from Australia. And I was like, this is not how I remember tennis. Like it was just,
I don't think people realize the Australia commitment though. Like what, for y'all, what it takes for you guys to like go travel and play. It's insane. You guys are literally never home.
Yeah, someone like Demonar, like the dude plays all year round. He's never home. Like he never comes home. I don't know how he does. I don't know how these guys do it, but I'm convinced that's why some of the Aussies have lost their marbles there. Like, did you guys see how Medvedev was like behaving at the end of the year? Like someone like that who's like tennis orientated his whole life and he's just fried. By the end, he was returning with the other side of the racket. Like the tennis schedule is absurd. Like if you really think about it, and you got guys like Medvedev doing that type of stuff, like.
But sometimes I feel like the Aussies, like, if I'm flying from California to Europe, it's 12 hours. Like Australia to Europe's 16. It's not that big of a difference. People are always acting like Australia is like in a different universe. Yeah. I get that it's a little further, but it's.
I guess it's more so just the fact, like, if I lost, say if I was playing like in the States, for instance, or obviously there's only like four tournaments in Australia, one, and that's whatever. But it's like if most of the Europeans like lose, they could just catch a small flight and they're back home and see their family for like 3-4 days. And that recharge period's huge.
I feel like for you guys from March to the US Open, though, it's like when do you go home?
Yeah, you can't really go home at all. And then you end up like, for me, that's why I was, you know, you'd go out a lot because I'd lose like middle of the week and I'm just like, well, what do? I can't go home because I'm playing next week. So I find myself stumbling to a bar somewhere and fucking, I'm just making friends with everyone. And then it just spirals out of control. Like you sacrifice so much home time and I'm not doing that. You know, I know Jack's the same. Like we just love home. I just love home.
I feel like the Aussies and the Americans like home more than the other players from other parts of the world.
Yeah, that's a fact.
The Europeans love going to Maldives together.
Maldives.
It's called the Maldives.
Radu Alba's doing workouts right now on the beach over there. He's been there for...
I feel like I related to you guys a lot. Like, I feel like I got along with the Americans the best out of everyone. Just because you guys, like, the sport there, like, I mean, if I didn't live in Australia, I'd definitely live in the States, that's for sure, but...
What city in the States are you living to right now? States?
Probably Nassau.
No. I like some pockets. Like, I like Santa Monica and stuff are really nice.
I'm coming at the end of January, beginning of February. Are we playing doubles?
Yeah, you said doubles. I'll play.
I'm flying to Australia.
You're going international, Jack?
With my Selkirk backpack, and I'm going to dink it around in Australia.
Oh, my God.
Dude, that's actually sick.
If he's in, then yeah.
You hated the Oz Open, but then you're going to come play here. Yeah.
Aussie Open was my least favorite major.
I've never understood this.
That slam sucked.
Dude, Sam and Jack, come on, that's ridiculous, dude.
I didn't say anything right
now.
No,
I enjoyed Australia. I always enjoyed.
Talk to your boy. Australia.
No, Aussie Open sucks.
It's pretty good. It's like the third best.
I like it.
Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst of the four.
I don't think so.
Dude, I'm sorry, but like as an event, okay, Wimbledon, like even as the event, it's not even that good in my opinion. Like I don't really like the setup. I don't like the cafe and stuff. Oz Open's unreal.
What are you talking about? Wimbledon is like on another level.
US Open's my favorite. US Open's my favorite.
Is US Open your favorite because of like the venue or are we talking New
York
City? I love
the venue. I think the food court's insane. I love it.
The food court is good, yeah.
The food court's good, dude. Pizza, sushi.
You also said Wimbledon is not that good. Can we?
No, Wimbledon's insane. Like it's insane. I just don't like the... I don't know. I prefer US Open. US Open is so simple. Like locker room, go upstairs, food. Wimbledon, just not a fan of it, man.
Wimbledon, you leave the locker room, you walk across a mini bridge and you go like...
Yeah, but I don't know.
You're not even 30 yards away from the... What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a little closer. That's a bad arguing point.
I don't know. I just like US Open better.
Wimbledon's like a pretty stuffy. Nick's like anti-stuffy. Maybe that's it. Like, you guys, it's as if you feel... Culturally, you don't mix with Wimbledon.
No, I don't. I don't know. I just feel weird there. Why are you looking at the screen like this, Jack? It's so weird.
Just lost it.
Okay, can we just say French Open's the worst?
Yeah, obviously.
No, Australia's the worst.
Dude, I want to hang up this call.
I got a question. You know, the three of us, I think, had a lot of pressure playing in New York at the US Open.
Yeah.
Do you have that kind of pressure playing at home? Like, you guys have a month to just, like, go from 0 to 100. Is that pressure for you guys? Is that enjoyable?
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, you guys are under a lot of pressure around that US Open. I mean, tennis in Australia is, like, our biggest sport. So around that time, we're, like... We deal with a lot of media and stuff. And at times I feel like I wish I was more of a player like James Duckworth going under the radar. But like, I'm not throwing him under the bus. I'm just painting a picture. Like there are some Aussie players that kind of like go under the radar during that time. And then you got like, obviously Demon, Cock, like myself, like every time you turn the TV on, there's like advertisement of, you know, us swinging a ball, like Oz Opens here. And it's a lot. And after that, like 2 weeks, I usually need like a month to just like, gather myself and just center myself again because I'm mentally all over the shop because there's a lot of pressure. And dude, Australians love tennis. Like they love it here. Like you guys got the coolest sports in the world. Like your sports are way better over there, but everyone just loves tennis and cricket here. It's so weird.
Are you conscious with your brand, your controversial bad boy? Yep. Like, are you thinking about that during the year and like kind of being like, all right, I have to like continue to like lash out or like say some things and like be, I'm not saying nuts, but like just be who you are. Is that just natural?
people that know and knew how I grew up and like how I was as a kid, like I haven't changed at all. Like I've always been kind of, I guess, on the like naughty side of things. But I mean, I don't feel as if I'm like.
Yeah, why you say it like that?
But like, for instance, like, yeah, okay, I don't do things to the book, like smash a bunch of rackets, like do this, do that. But like, I feel like in sport, why we love sport is you have to have contrast and personality. If I draw Sinner at Oz Open third round, like the reason why everyone's like everyone will watch that because it's contrasting in personalities, like we don't like each other. And I think it's actually healthy in sport, but I don't consciously go out there and think like, oh, I'm, you know, obviously for my, you know, like Good Trouble, my podcast and all this other stuff, like I understand that the brand kind of that had been created over the last 12 years of my career is, it's almost benefited me to be, I guess, this controversial person because...
You don't think you play into the bad boy role?
Sometimes, when I'm on court, like, I think, it, depending on how I feel, which is, for me, it's a coin flip. Like, I don't know how I'm going to wake up and how I'm going to act on court. So, yeah, like, but when I'm in that mood, hell yeah, like, I'll stir up the crowd for sure and I'll do anything to... But that's not thinking about what comes after it. I'm enjoying the moment, like, of just being a little...
It sounds like you enjoy, you know, for lack of better terms, like being, I guess, like the villain of the tour to a certain degree, right? You know, there's the guys that kind of walk.
I haven't failed any drug tests.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask, like, you're obviously when people have failed drug tests in tennis, you're like pretty vocal about it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm like, look, I think it's bad too. Why do you feel the need to like be vocal about that?
Honestly, it's nothing personal. Like, what would I have personal against Iga Swiatek? Like, I've got nothing personal on Iga. I just think that it should be level playing field for everyone. And that's what pisses me off because I know that, you know, when I watch, like, Roger and Djokovic and these, you know, they're gods in my eyes where, you know, and then when you have, like, one of us four versus one of them, like, the more relatable guys, like, you know, I feel like we have to, there's a lot of fans out there that, want us to do well because we're relatable. Like you see us at a bar having a drink, like we're human, where these guys, I feel like they already have an advantage because they're just gods. And then they're taking all these other performance enhancing drugs. Just like for me, it makes me angry because I know that me personally, I've never done it and I won't ever do it. And I know that I drink alcohol and I may not get a good night's sleep and I'm already putting myself against the back of the wall. And then I've got to go out there and this guy's rubbing cream all over his body that gives him some crazy aura. Then it's not fair. That's why I'm angry about it.
All right. That's fair enough. I'm kind of in agreement with you.
Once you get caught, you can't act like the victim. That's what pisses me off even more. I'm like, hold on a second. You employ your team, don't you?
Do you think recreational drugs should be like fine in tennis?
Absolutely. 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 But like, let's be real. Like, how can you say you go out, you know, you we're human, we go out, we have a party, whatever. How in our sport can someone get punished 2 years for doing, you know, having a night out or whatever, versus someone that's actually trying to, you know, enhance their performance? And I think it's not even a conversation of which one's worse, in my opinion. Like, obviously they're both bad, but surely you guys are on the same page, my God.
Even like the Yimmer thing, or like, if you miss a couple drug tests, you don't like put in your location and all of a sudden, like you're just done. Yeah. You're done. Yeah. Like basically you're done for life, as opposed to somebody, rubbing some cream on them and correct. Like, get like, yeah, it's not even.
But for Yimmer as well, like he was a player that, you know, his game style, he grinded his whole career to get to like 60 in the world, and then he missed a couple drug tests, which he shouldn't have done, but that's our rules, but he missed it. And now he's someone like that to build back all the way up is probably not going to happen again. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't seem level playing field for everyone, and that's what frustrates me, because I don't know. I feel like you need people that are going to be vocal on it.
I think a lot of people are thinking what you're saying. You're vocally saying it. You're publicly saying it. And I think probably a lot of people are thinking the exact same thing and maybe just not. Yeah, obviously, maybe a little scared to say it or whatever. But yeah, I mean, if you fail a drug test,
I haven't told anyone this yet, but on the 11th of December, I'm bringing, like, you know, you guys know Elliot Loney. Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
He's the guy that does like the impersonations, right?
We're
going to reenact like some of the doping cases over the last like 10 years. And we're going to do like a little like parody on it. So like we're going to reenact the cases and stuff and then put it in like a little like have like a professional like film it. So we do episodes like, you know, Arani, for instance, like she was cooking the pasta and then the meds just bumped in the pasta and she ate it anyway. And then that's how it happened. So we're going to reenact all these like episodes. It's going to be good.
When it comes to like your fame, you're probably the most famous tennis player that's never won a slam. And then, and then John, Stevie, Jack, and I are right behind you. And,
you know. Very similar.
When you're walking around Australia, like, are you getting recognized left and right? Are you one of the like five most famous athletes in Australia right now?
Yeah, I mean, look, in Australia, it would be an NBA player, an NFL player, like walking around like in the States, you know, in their hometown. It's pretty hectic here in Australia, and it's sometimes a bit overwhelming, but I think over the course of my career, now I'm much more loved in Australia than I was at the start and in the midsection of my career. I guess they kind of understood that I wasn't going to change, and they kind of respected that in a way. But it is pretty hectic here. Yeah, like you got to be careful all the time. Every time I go outside, like there's always going to be, you know, someone like it's pretty crazy. Like I go out, you know, with my partner to go have a meal, and then the next day it's like there's photos that we didn't even know someone took. It's in the news. It's weird. It's pretty weird here. Yeah.
Do you think you're gonna get to the point again, I would say, like, that you believe you're gonna win a slam? Do you think you can get to that mentality, or are you there now? Do you believe you could like win the Australian Open or no?
I believe in my ability, but I just think it's an interesting time in tennis at the moment. Like, obviously, when we were all playing, and I watched this episode when you guys were talking, like, did you ever believe that you were going to win a slam? It's like, I feel like now the draws can be so open where, like, back in the day, like, if I made the last 16 of a slam, I was by far the worst player there. Like, it was like prime Songa, Wawrinka, like Federer. And what were the chances that one of us were going to beat Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, and someone else to win a slam? It just was not going to happen. Like, you can light them up maybe once, but then, like, the next day I couldn't walk. And I'm like, whoa. And then what am I going to do? It's ridiculous. But now I feel like if you got a favorable draw and then you get to a quarters or a semi and you just, by then, the adrenaline's pumping and you feel like, you know, they're just kids for me, like, still. Like, Alcaraz and Sinner and stuff, like, they're good. Don't get me wrong, they're going to be generational talents and probably some of the best tennis players. But for me, they don't have that aura yet of when I played, you know, the Federer, Djokovic, like, they don't have that yet. And I think that's a big edge. I think you can play on that a bit. Like, I couldn't go out against Federer and start, like, playing mind games with him. It just didn't work with him. But I feel like it could work with these guys still. If you get the right draw now, I think it's very possible, yeah.
Yeah, what would you like to see out of this kind of comeback and kind of journey, I guess, journey back to tennis and however you see that going? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, every time I play tennis now, I got to do an hour and a half treatment after. Like, my wrist, I lose feeling in my fingers sometimes. It's tingling. So I'm definitely on the back end. Like, I couldn't see myself playing for another max a year and a half probably, like, with my body, honestly, with my wrist at the moment. Like, it feels good, but I wouldn't want to force it more than that. So I just want to go out and have, like, just have a bit of fun and hopefully have some good, if I have some great results, that's a bonus, but just go out there and play and enjoy it. And you know, we love this sport. So I realize now that it is coming to an end, and I enjoy, it's been a hell of a ride, but there's still a little bit. I want to be super controversial, and I want to have some fun, and I want to play some good tennis, like all three at once, just one last time.
Do you think the players are, like, excited for you to come back, or you think they're just like, oh, we got to deal with this guy again? Like, why won't he just go away? Or do you even care? Do you even care what they think?
Yeah, I don't even know if they're thinking about it, to be honest. But, like, I don't know. The tennis world right now just seems a little boring. Like, imagine if this doping stuff wasn't going on. Like, I just feel like something's, I don't know, ever since kind of obviously Rafa going was a, I don't know, I got emotional about it, weirdly emotional about it. I was like, it's so weird seeing these guys go. And even seeing, like, you know, you guys go, just, it's just like tennis for me right now is in a very weird, I don't know, it's lacking something. I don't know what it is. Or am I just, you're not feeling it or what?
I think it's a bit dry at the moment. I'm not going to, yeah.
We were on such a high with Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. It's hard to keep that going.
Yeah, I know, but like, don't, like, even there when there was like slams and, you know, you were like, if you, the round, I don't know, there were spicy matchups in the third round, like at slams. Like, I feel like I don't even know if some of these guys and they all play the same. I don't know, it was weird. Like, no one wanted to see Query second round of a slam. Guys serving rockets and like, you chopped me up Acapulco, bro. Like, I was like, I'm going to win this tournament. And then you just lit me up. You lit me up. Like
I sure did.
I don't know, Tennis. It's in a weird spot right now. I don't know.
Can we go backwards for a couple seconds here? You just said you got a bit emotional about Rafa.
Yeah.
You guys don't have the greatest relationship, I don't think.
Couldn't stand him.
You know, what made it emotional for you?
I don't know. It's like I used to hate and despise him so much when I saw him walking around. Like, I was like, he was probably one guy that always motivated me. Like, I was like, if I played him, I'd try and get up for it. I'd try and get the best tennis I could possibly play. But I didn't feel that, like, anger towards, like, Federer or Novak when I played him. Like, when I played Rafa, I don't know. He was like, I guess because everyone in my academies back home idolized him. They were like, oh, he's such a hard worker. He's like this, he's that. And I was like, I can't stand this guy. I can't stand him. And I just I wanted to show people that like you could just be chilled and have fun and beat someone like that. But I mean, did you see that tribute they played at the Davis Cup for him? It was like, I don't know, I got a bit emotional for him.
I guess sometimes like people, you see that in sports, it could be like a rival that you hate. And not really saying you and Rafa are like rivals, but
no,
we when one goes away, you're not rivals. That's like you're just another guy. You're just another guy to Rafa.
Oh, it was a flash in the pan, nothing major.
But you know what I mean? Like sometimes people like get sad or emotional when when your rival or like your greatest competitor goes away from the sport, like him or not like him.
Yeah, like he had a hell of a career and I don't think we'll ever see someone as dominant as him on the clay. There's no way. I mean, we say that now, who knows, but I don't think it's possible to.
Stevie in college was more dominant than Rafa on clay. We've established that.
As Jack stated a few episodes ago, those Arizona State crowds, they get rowdy, dude.
You want no part of that. You want no part of that.
Has anyone ever gotten close to your record?
To mine?
Yeah.
No. I mean, Michael Pernfors, this guy, Georgia Bulldog back in the day, had like 40-something.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think all records are meant to be broken, but that's a hard one to break because these guys will just turn pro at this point. It doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
They won't stay in there that long.
I can't see anyone.
Sam would have had probably 85 in a row, but he was too good at 18.
No. I would have mentally checked out for something.
And Jack, actually. You guys both didn't go to college.
I would have gone to Nebraska and like tried out for the football team or something.
If me and Jack were in the same team at college, we wouldn't have made it.
We'd probably be dead.
Even suspension.
We would not have made it.
We would be dead. Yeah, we would be in a ditch somewhere.
I would be gone skis.
I got a two-parter for you here, Nick.
Oh, I'm so excited for this one.
Yes.
First of all, what's a potato? And secondly, who is the biggest potato on tour?
What's a potato? Potato is like a spud. Like it's like a round vegetable that's pretty.
No, we get what the potato is. What's like the definition of a potato?
Oh,
is.
Oh,
like,
oh.
Come on.
Oh, come on, dude.
When you're referring to people as potatoes on Twitter and stuff.
When you refer to someone as a potato, what does that mean? And who is the biggest potato?
A potato is something that's like plain. It's like you're just a fucking potato. Like you don't do anything. You're spud, boring. You know? You're a spud. Like the biggest potato is Ben Rothenberg. Oh.
Yeah, I'll agree with you.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're going to do a few hypotheticals would you rathers.
Oh, these are my favorite.
All right. So, all right. Would you rather be loved by all the fans and like none of your peers or players, or be loved by like all the players on tour and hated by the fans?
I would take the, well, you guys don't play anymore. So I would take loved by the people and hated by the players. I don't care. It depends because I'm not really close. There's probably three players that I probably text outside of the tennis world at the moment. And
who are they? Kokkinakis?
Yeah, Thompson and Pro. No,
give us one guy that's not an Aussie that you're like friends with.
Well, Sock, that's it. But he doesn't play anymore.
Outside of this podcast.
Outside, and it can't be Jack either. And it's got to be a current player. And they got to be a lefty. And they got to be, no, I'm just joking.
Pedro Martinez. Seriously, me and Pedro
Martinez.
Are
you friends with any guys outside of Australia? Like true friends?
Yeah, Pedro Martinez. He texts me on Instagram.
No, you've lost your mind. Stop, man. What are you talking about?
I will screenshot
you and Pedro Martinez are not friends. No,
I will screenshot, bro.
Nah, Mario's
got Bill. We speak. Okay, friends is in
it.
Like, okay,
stop
okay.
it.
All right. Well, no one then. Jack knows me better than all right. No one then. No one.
Gaming, basketball, and tennis. You can play one for fun. You can go pro in one of them, and you can watch one. What are you doing?
Ooh, I would go pro in basketball because what these guys are making money wise is absurd. Like absurd.
Australia or NBA?
NBA. NBA. Then I would play for fun gaming, and then I would watch tennis because I don't mind actually watching tennis. Watching tennis can be fun. Like I used to come and watch you play. I remember you snipped up Dimitrov 1 year in on the French, and I was there from start to finish. It took like an hour and 18 minutes. I enjoy watching like matchups and stuff. I would do that. Watch tennis, pro ball, and play game for fun.
All right, I got one for you, Nick. You can replay one match in your career. Win, loss, doesn't matter. What are you doing, and are you going to change the outcome?
Yeah, I'm changing the outcome of the Wimbledon final, 100%. Like, I mean,
then we couldn't have you on here.
Yeah, that's true, though, so maybe I wouldn't. Maybe
which
I'll
one's
lose,
more
like,
important?
Maybe I'll lose 7-6 in the fifth. So I could say I was one game away. That one for sure, I think that would have changed. Although I don't know if my motivation to come back and play would have been as high, but at the same time, I feel like for me that would have been like everything that I worked for was just to win that. And I think, yeah, that would have been it probably if for me. Like I couldn't see myself having motivation after that, to be honest. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Who knows?
Would you rather have $20 million right now or a Grand Slam title?
$20 million. Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
See, I think we're the same on that. Yeah, we're the same.
Come
on,
like I couldn't care. You think?
All right, hey, I'm out $10 million or a slam right now.
$10 million right now. You
$5 million or a slam? I want to know where's the line drawn.
Well, five, like a slam is basically
it's $5 million. Yeah.
So yeah,
well, I think that's the problem. I think like you go win a slam in Australia, you're probably gonna go make 20 to 30. Like you're like.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, I mean, well, we didn't have to go into that much detail. We could have just. You know, I'm just saying a slam's not that important.
It's just a hypothetical here.
So I guess we kind of found out that tennis is, I guess, still, it's very business-like. It's more of a business.
What about a 2025 Indian Wells half-court title with me or a Grand Slam in singles?
Honestly, I would rather the half-court title.
I knew it. Yeah. No, I knew it. Dude, I knew it. Same. No, same.
That would be so sick. Because now I'm thinking like the dinner afterwards. Oh, baby.
We go to Del Taco. Man,
Del Taco gets sick. Bro, I went to Del Taco at 3 a.m. and got food poisoning.
So you got diarrhea from Del Taco.
And then I had to call Federer when I was in my pants saying I can't play today.
Would you rather have a 11 months a year, everything's based in Australia, or 4 months of the year is your season and it's outside of Australia?
I'd do the four months because then I'd look forward to being home, like... you know what? I mean, humans are like that. When you have access to everything, you kind of lose the enjoyment. 4 months would be good because I like the States too. I go over there watching the ball, playing. Where else is it? Is it? No, I don't know about Asia though. Can we cancel that swing?
Well, I mean,
should I just play Shanghai this year just for the gags?
Half court? You want to play? You want to play half court? I'll come to Shanghai. Play half court.
A half court Shanghai?
No, I can't. I can't go to Shanghai ever again.
Who's the most annoying player on tour? And it could be someone that's retired too. Most annoying player over the last like 10 years.
Oh, by the way, when you guys were talking about Jack in doubles and he'd pick fights, that is the most realistic thing I've ever
heard. It's not a thing. That wasn't a thing.
Jack's kind of a jerk on the doubles court, right?
I was sometimes nervous. Like, I'm not nervous because I'd have your back all the time, but it was like you would sometimes on a doubles court be in a mood where like you'd hate the other player for no reason.
Yeah, they piss me off sometimes.
Yeah, but like the forehands just coming in, like you would purposely try and tube them for no reason.
All right, best Jack and Nick double story on court.
What's our best off court?
Well, give us best most annoying person, then best double story.
Okay, most annoying person to play against.
Both
in general, I could not stand Fernando Verdasco. I couldn't stand the guy. I don't know why. He was raining somewhere and he had his shirt off practicing. I'm like, dude, it's not even sunny. Put your shirt back on. Why are you practicing with your shirt off? It's raining.
I don't know. By the way, I don't know if we're laughing at your answer or the fact that we did an episode where we were Vegas draft and we can go to Vegas with anyone. And I picked Verdasco first overall who I'd want to go to Vegas with. I think he's so cool. I'm like a big Verdasco guy.
I don't think I've ever met someone more arrogant through the hallways ever in my life.
Sam's got the rose-colored glasses on.
Anyway, I'm not saying he probably would be a hell of fun on a night out in Vegas for sure, but I just couldn't stand the guy. Like,
yeah, but he'd probably just take his shirt off and look at himself in the mirror the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know. And then to play, Rafa to play was brutal. Like when he missed the first serve and then he'd do his routine and I'm like, that would, for me, would throw me off big time. Like, to get into the rhythm of returning a second serve was, I hated it. And he would abuse the shot clock all the time. And then doubles, sizzle. We've had some good ones.
Yeah, you guys ever have like a...
Oh, I got a good one. I got a good one. So we were in the semis of Rome.
Yeah, this is what I was going to talk about.
And we were, I guess, well, I don't know what the score was. I think it was 9-8. We were serving semis of Rome. We were against Mark Lopez and Feliciano Lopez. And we got Jack served.
Hated both of them.
Yeah, Jack served 9-8. I'm like, we're sorted. I'm the big body at the net. I don't have great, you know, coaches' volleys, but I'm here just snatching them away. Haven't barely lost points to Mark Lopez all match. All Sock's been doing is kicking his serve in, like, heavy kicker. And Lopez is, like, climbing a ladder on, like, trying to return it back. And Sock misses the first serve. I'm like, okay, no worries. Like, got very heavy second serve. Hits it, just slightly decels. Goes a little long. And I'm like, no worries. Like, you pick your partner up, you go back. You're like, no worries, man, no worries. Like, come on, get back into this. So you just, okay, same thing again. Misses the first serve, and I'm like, Surely not. Like, surely not.
I sure did.
Sizzle, little decel, hit the net tape and like rolled out. I was like,
double, dude.
I went double at 9-8.
10-9 down. I'm going back. I'm like, sorry, man, come on. You've been returning really well. And he's not listening to me at all. Like, I just knew we were f***ed. I was just trying to go. I was like, come on, bro. Because I wasn't returning.
This is when Nick had like one eyebrow shaved and it was like, I don't even know. Like,
and he was on a different planet. And then anyway, Mark Lopez kicks the serve in, Sock just grounds the return, walks off. And I'm just like,
I gave it a shovel into the crowd and walked to the net.
We go into the locker room and he destroyed like, I don't know. You destroyed like three. I don't know. I sit next to you. I was like, you just messaged me in a couple of days. I love you, bro. And then I just left. And then, like, I didn't hear from him for, like, 2 days. And then I was like, bro, I couldn't care less. Like, who cares? Things happen.
But that was one of the more heated I've been, I feel like, maybe in my, yeah.
But, not. Like, who cares? Like, you look about it now, you were so hard on yourself. And it was like, who the f*** actually cares?
I went double. What do you make of?
Bro, who cares? Against Mark Lopez.
I had four chances. I missed all of them.
That was funny. We've had some good ones, though.
What about the night out at McDonald's after?
What? That same night? You guys went
throwing,
to Mickey D's?
Throwing hamburgers. No, we can't speak about this one.
Yeah, I want to write. I just want to write a chapter about McDonald's. That's what I want to do.
How about this one? You got 15. Would you rather sit in a middle seat coach between me and Isner for 15 hours? Or you have to watch the entire Isner Mahout Wimbledon match from start to finish?
I would sit next to you guys. That's
no.
No, 100%. Dude, think about how many stop starts you'd have to put up with, bro. You joking? No, I couldn't watch that match. Sorry.
John's big ass sit next to you there for Huth.
Yeah, you guys are big humans. But I mean, we could chat. Like, we could talk about, like, I don't know, man. Like, oh, how many rallies did they have? Barely any. No, I couldn't watch that. No way.
Let me go one more. If you don't play another match, who's had the better career? You or John Isner?
Isner for sure. Not even close.
Oh, look at that. All right. I thought maybe you'd say,
what do you think of Isner's game outside of his serve?
I felt like Is was probably one of the bigger, like, one of the, like, for instance, I played Karlovic. It was like, put anything in and you're chilling. Where, like, although sometimes he, Dr. Evo with his slice, found good depth and I was so tight. But I feel like John's forehand was good. Like, if you're two sets to love up against Rafa on dirt, he was two sets to love up, right? At the French.
2-1.
But yeah, like, you can't. Nah, John was all right. I mean, he had his moments when he couldn't hit the ball in, but there was some when he was all right. But his career is way better. I mean, he was doing it for so long. He was like 15 years.
All right, man. That's all we got for you.
That was fun, man. I appreciate it, guys. No, it was
good. We're excited for the return.
I'm excited for more content of Nothing Major. It's really funny, boys. I enjoyed a lot. It's good. Keep doing it. It's really good.
Appreciate that.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of Nothing Major. We're actually letting Nick Kyrgios do Random Tennis Player of the Week. He wanted it this week, so it's all him. But first, follow us, our social handle, at Nothing Major. We are on Instagram, X, and we're on YouTube now. Every episode is on YouTube, comes out on Mondays, full videos. They're awesome. Go check them out. So with that, Nick Kyrgios, give us your Random Player of the Week.
Okay, I got one. Temuraz Gabashvili.
That's a good one.
Tammy the Torpedo.
He was good, dude.
Gabashvili. Wow.
I'm trying to think. This is a good game. That Jack, you were the king of doing that. Like, you were like, you'd have a bad day in practice. You're like, I'm playing like someone, and you just pull them out of the hat.
All right, yours was good. Yeah, Gabashvili. That's a good one.
It's half court. Is that a real thing?
Yeah. You want? Yeah. Well, no. Pedro Martinez might hit me up.
Thanks, Nick. That was great.
See you guys.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.